Appreciate Noah always taking a moment to fill us in on these trips. They're always good, and be encouraged by our young people and those who go with them and the things they get to experience and learn. And they always come back excited and exhausted, but a good time together. This, well, I wish this was my library. Some of you in this room are going, I know, I get it. But you walk down the shelves of or aisles of a bookstore, you scroll through book websites and things, one of the things you're going to come across are typically hundreds of books that deal with becoming a success. Some of those have principles, but a lot of them are written from the perspective of you are the key to your success. In other words, you read the book and the focus of it is that you make sure that you have the right skills, that you have the right connections, that you have the right attitude, because you're the key. And if you read them carefully, a lot of them come with the idea that success is defined by a large bank account or running a huge business or having a tremendous amount of influence or those sorts of things. Now, it needs to be said from the outset that it is not wrong for a person to have money or to run a business or to be in a powerful position. That's certainly not the case. While the Bible warns us against the love of money and those sorts of things, there are plenty of people throughout the pages of the Bible who were greatly wealthy, greatly influential, and also very faithful. Abraham, the father of the faithful, was a tremendously wealthy man. So much so that you might recall that he and his nephew Lot could not even stay in the same location because they had so many flocks and workers that they just could not get along and stay there. Job is described as the greatest man in the East, and the Bible lists a tremendous amount of wealth and possessions he has. And if you remember, as that book closes, after he goes through all the difficulty, the Bible specifically tells us that the Lord blessed Job twice as much as he had before. And all those things are listed again. David goes from a shepherd to the palace. And in that place of power, he wields a huge amount of power, obviously a tremendous amount of wealth. But yet, while he wasn't perfect, he clearly was a man called as the one after God's own heart. Joseph of Arimathea was able to bury the body of Jesus because of his wealth and owning a tomb, but also because of the connections that he had to even make the request. Lydia, most likely, was a fairly wealthy woman because she dealt in purple cloth, but also we're told she had a household that probably means she had workers or even servants. And there are others. But these people are enough to remind us that here are some folks who were considered successful, if you please, by the standards of the world, and yet still work through that to show that they could be successful in the eyes of God, be faithful in Him. As we pick up tonight in the narrative of Joseph, we're thinking about him in a very interesting situation. We're going through his life not scene by scene. In fact, we're going to jump over Genesis chapter 39. That is the chapter where you have Joseph and Potiphar's wife. I'll mention, by the way, that sometimes you study that chapter and all we ever take away from that whole chapter is, hey, it's a good idea to run away from temptation. Well, if that's all we get from Genesis chapter 39, we've missed the point of the chapter. Because three different times in that one chapter, you have a reference to the Lord remembering or the Lord being with Joseph. And also in the middle of the chapter, the reason Joseph ran away from the temptation was because he knew that God was with him. That's the point of Genesis 39, is God being with Joseph. But I want to remind us that that occurs because when you pick up the narrative in Genesis chapter 40, Joseph, by the gift of God, is able to again deal with dreams, this time interpret dreams. The cupbearer, whose dream Joseph interprets, is released from prison. But if you look all the way at the very last verse of Genesis chapter 40, we're told that the cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but instead he forgot him. And if you cross the line to Genesis chapter 41, the very first words tell us that 2 years pass. For 2 years, this man who had had this bizarre dream in prison had told it to Joseph. Joseph had interpreted it and had requested to be remembered to the Pharaoh, to the king. For 2 years, he forgets that had happened. But Genesis chapter 41 is another turning point in the life of Joseph. As the cupbearer finally remembers Joseph when the Pharaoh has a dream himself and the Pharaoh cannot figure out the meaning of it. And so you might recall, if you're familiar with the life of Joseph, that he's called and he interprets the dream. And by the end of Genesis chapter 41, seemingly at the end of basically one day or at least a very, very short amount of time, Joseph goes from the prison to right at the very top of the kingdom. In worldly terms, he becomes an overnight or overday success. And so tonight what I want to do is go through Genesis 41 and consider some things that will help us to let God be God in times when we are also successful. Because instead of it being me-centered, what we see in this chapter helps us to stay grounded and stay faithful when we do have moments of success. There are more in this chapter, but let's consider four that are found in Genesis 41. The first being the most important and overarching principle, and that is to give God the glory. Here is Joseph's big chance. Here he is called before the most powerful man in the entire world, and when he's called before the Pharaoh gives him the credit before he ever does anything. Look at what's said in Genesis 41, verses 14 and 15. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him, Joseph, out of the pit. And when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came in before Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have had a dream, and there is no one who can interpret it. I have heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. Now, if you were reading one of those self-help books from the bookstore, how would it tell you to respond to that type of request? The most powerful man in the world has basically said, this is your moment. You are the key to this. You have the ability. And as a person of power, what he probably thinks is, at the very least, you should just say, thank you, sir, and then do your job. But as someone who deals with people, he probably thinks, well, he's probably going to pump himself up just a little bit here because this is his time. Maybe it's the time to read your resume. You know what? You're right. I interpreted a dream of the cupbearer. That's how you heard of me. And here I am to do it for you. Is that not what most books would tell us to do? This is your moment. Make sure you take the credit. Make sure you get the in and use it. But look at Joseph's response in verse 16. Joseph answered Pharaoh, it is not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. Now, I don't know Hebrew, and this conversation probably occurred in ancient Egyptian anyway, and I for sure don't know that. But if our translations are correct as far as the order of this, can you not imagine the face of the Pharaoh dropping when Joseph begins by saying, basically, it's not me. He has heard of Joseph. He has heard of this specific skill. And he says, I've heard you're the guy to do this. And Joseph leads with, it's not me. Almost every book you can think about would say, that's the dumbest thing you possibly could say in that situation. But instead, Joseph knows exactly what he is doing. Because he says, it's not in me. It's in God. He gives all the glory, all the credit to God. This is not Joseph's, if you will, natural ability. This is not something where he has made himself some great dream interpreter. This is God who did it. God is the one who gave Joseph either this ability all of the time or gave Joseph this ability at specific times in his life to do this. Whether it was all the time or specific times, Joseph does not take the credit. Instead, he gives the glory to God. And I can already hear some of the pushback. Because some people will push back and say, you know what? I watch football too, or I watch award shows too, and a winner gets on stage or a winner gets a trophy or a medal, and the first thing they want to do after you've watched a movie where they've cursed and taken God's name in vain 43 times is to say, I give God the glory for all this. That's not what Joseph is doing. This is not some glib acknowledgement of God. Joseph is one who has lived a life of consistent faithfulness. He's not perfect, but the overall thrust of his life is one where he obviously tried to do the will of God in every situation in which he found himself. After all, is that not why he was in prison in the first place? Because he remembered that God was with him, and he could not commit this particular sin against God. And so when you read of Joseph saying this, this is not some half-hearted acknowledgement of God. This is not just giving lip service to it. This is what Joseph knows to be true. This is what Joseph lives day after day after day. When someone gives you credit for something, it's fine to say a word of thanks, of course. They're trying to give you a compliment. And it's respectful simply to say thank you. Allow them to be able to say a sincere word and to encourage you, of course. But at any point you possibly can, make sure you give God the glory. You may have taken the time to build up a talent, but God's the one who blessed you with that talent. You may have earned a degree or another degree or have so many letters after your name, they spell their own word. But God gave you the mind to process the information. You may have started a company or won an election, but God gave you the abilities to do those types of things. And now that you have, to use a modern term, more of a platform, you have more of an opportunity to speak an honest word for God before more people. Notice that Joseph does not say one of the gods will do this. After all, he is speaking to a man who runs a nation or empire that's unabashedly polytheistic. In fact, depending on the Pharaoh, sometimes the Pharaohs were considered gods themselves, and other times they were considered sons of the gods. He for certain is considered either a deity or a child of deity, but Joseph does not step into that and say, your father, or one of your gods, or the god of the dreams, or the god of the Nile. Joseph does not bat an eye when he looks at this man and says, God is the one who's going to do this. So now even this Pharaoh, who knows of all these other deities, realizes that this is the God, the one whom Joseph serves. No matter what else we say tonight, this is the main point of the lesson. When you have a moment of success, give God the glory. But under that umbrella, number two, don't bury your abilities. Now we could argue that Joseph really had no choice but to interpret the dreams of the Pharaoh. He's dealing with a man who holds his life in his hands. I get that. But still, after giving God the credit, Joseph does exactly what God had given him the ability, the talent to do. Joseph was told the dream by Pharaoh, and Joseph interprets the dream. If you read it carefully, he interprets the dream down to the very last, tiniest little details. But also notice that as he gives the interpretation of the dream, Joseph continues to give God credit over and over and over again. Look at verse 25. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. Look at verse 28. God has shown to Pharaoh what he is about to do. Look at verse 32. The thing is fixed by God, and God will shortly bring it about. Now Joseph does what he is supposed to do, interpret the dream. But he continually points to God as the one who gave the dream, to God as the one who really is the one interpreting the dream, but really it's beyond that. Because what he's really doing is pointing to God as the one who's in control of the entire world. Think of what that subtly means. Pharaoh, you're not. This is a bold move. To say God has fixed this. God is going to do this. And it's important for us to take away from this that Joseph did not hide his talent. The ability that God had given him, he used, and he used to the glory of God. You know, one of the things that makes the Lord's body so wonderful is the diversity of it. And often when we think about that word diversity, we think of things like racial diversity, and that is a beautiful part of the tapestry of God's kingdom. But there are other types of diversity in the kingdom, such as a diversity of talents and abilities. And those are a beautiful part of the kingdom of God as well. When you read the picture of the church as a body in 1 Corinthians chapter 12 and elsewhere, that makes even more sense. You might recall that in that text, Paul talks about how the whole body can't be an eye or an ear. That's just not how a body works. It even makes sense. Well, the same thing is true in the church. Not everyone can be a Bible class teacher. Not everyone can be someone who has the means to support a widow in a very strong way. Not everyone can be a song leader, and on the list goes. But the same is also true of members of the church outside of the church. What I mean is God has given some people abilities to be carpenters, others to be school teachers, others to be homemakers, lawyers, factory workers, and on and on and on and on the list goes. And those talents and abilities, so long as they're used in a way that's moral and ethical, need to be used to the glory of God. And then those talents and abilities need to be brought into the church to help build up the church. If I have a talent and ability to teach, yes, I could teach school or whatever it happens to be, but can I also not teach children here or adults here. And have ability as a carpenter or someone who works with plumbing and those sorts of things. I can make a living doing that, but can I also help a widow who needs something fixed in her house within the church and use my talent in that way? See, you're being successful, even if you never earn a large amount of money, if you take the talents and abilities that God has given you and you use them to shine His light in the world, always giving Him the credit and always giving Him the glory. Don't bury your abilities. Number three, accept responsibility. You ever thought about the change in Joseph's life that occurs in what seems to be one day and really one conversation? All Joseph did was interpret a dream. Yes, it was by the gift of God, but that was why he was called in, and that's what it seems like he was going to do. It seems like earlier that day he'd been in prison, and now he interprets the dream. And the Pharaoh completely changes his tune and decides to make Joseph in charge of all of Egypt. Now, whether Pharaoh believed in Joseph's God or not, it's interesting how Pharaoh speaks of him. Look at what is said in verses 39 through 41. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has shown you all this," notice he doesn't say the gods. "Since God has shown you all this, there is none so discerning and wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall order themselves as you command. Only in regards to the throne will I be greater than you." And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "See, I have set you over all the land of Egypt." And if you keep reading, Pharaoh gives even more specifics, but that's enough for us to see just this complete turnaround from the prison to right to the very top of the entire empire, seemingly in one day. Now here's the thing. If you and I were in that situation, you might have been tempted to say, "Wait a minute, you've got the wrong guy. Yes, God gave me the ability to interpret dreams. That's what I was called in here to do, so that's what I did. But to run an entire empire? You want me to do that? You've got the wrong guy. That's not my thing." There's no pushback from Joseph. He accepts the responsibility. By the way, to some degree, God had already shown him how to do it. Because in the interpretation, Joseph lays out with a fairly simple plan for storing up food during those years of plenty, so there'd be plenty of grain for the times of famine. But still, Joseph had to step up and actually accept the ring from Pharaoh and be willing to take charge of all that the king, the emperor, puts under his charge. We live in a time in which a lot of people don't want to accept big responsibilities. We kind of like our comfortable lives, kind of like things just roll along the way they are, and we don't want to take on things that might disrupt the way we've got it going. And recently, we appointed additional elders here at Central. We started that process. One of the things I mentioned in the sermon was there are a lot of Christian men of all ages, but some who are old enough to be elders, some who are coming up and thinking about that in the future, who have no desire to be an elder simply because it might be difficult. It might kind of, you know, upset the apple cart as far as their life goes, but it goes far beyond that. We're always looking out for Bible class teachers. Ask our deacons in charge of that. But some people have a comfortable life, and after all, I like going to my Bible class, and I don't want to deal with these unruly kids who, you know, like blow their nose in class, or sometimes they don't use a Kleenex to do that or whatever. I don't know how to cut out little tiny Josephs and all that kind of stuff. Or I know that Jesus said that I'm supposed to teach people the gospel, but that might lead to an uncomfortable conversation or a difficult question. So I just kind of live my simple life and I don't accept the responsibility I have as a disciple of Jesus to reach out to others. God has the biggest dreams of anyone. Take the gospel to the whole world. You've never had a dream that large, and neither have I. That's His. Am I willing to step up and accept the responsibilities of the things that He places before me, places before you? And it's not that we do that to try to gain some position or have some kind of name within the church. It is simply that God places opportunities before us, and we have to be willing to say, "Yes, I will be the one." Like Isaiah did, "Here am I, send me." But number four, don't lose sight of the big picture. You know, sometimes you read through the Bible, especially in the Old Testament to me anyway, it's kind of easy to lose track of the time, the passage of time. The beginning of verse 50 has this phrase, before the year of famine came. Wait a second, what? 6 to 7 years just passed. You think about the end of chapter 40, Joseph's put in prison, or in prison, he interprets a dream. The beginning of chapter 41, 2 years passed. Now, basically, from verse 1 to here, it's probably a day, or maybe a few days. And now all of a sudden we jump forward between 6 and 7 years. And in those years, verse 49 tells us that grain had been stored up in great abundance. It was like the sand of the sea. In fact, you might recall, they even stopped counting how much was being taken in because there's just so much it's not even worth dealing with anymore as far as how much they've got. It would have been very easy for Joseph to get caught up in his own success and lose sight of the fact that God was with him. But Joseph wasn't like that. And we know that because of what he names his sons. Look at what's recorded in verses 50 through 52. Before the year of famine came, two sons were born to Joseph. Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bore them to him. Joseph called the name of the first Manasseh. For he said, God has made me, forget all my hardship and all my father's house. The name of the second he called Ephraim. For God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. Joseph includes a reference to God and to the goodness and grace of God in the reasoning why he names these two sons the way that he does. Again, this is at the end of several years of tremendous earthly success for Joseph. When we begin to have a lot of success, it becomes much, much easier to just take the credit for ourselves and forget God. But Joseph just keeps pointing his life right back to God because he realizes that God is the one who's in charge of all of this. And then if you or I have a season or a longer sustained period of success, watch out. Because if you're not guarding your heart, you begin to think that you really are the key. Those books are right. It's all about you. It's all about your connections, your abilities. You begin to think of what you have done, and you lose sight of God, who's the one behind everything that you have. And God doesn't take lightly to that. Remember, it was because Nebuchadnezzar spoke of Babylon, the great Babylon, which I have built. That's why God caused him to be driven out of the city and act like an animal, live like an animal for 7 times. Remember, there was Herod hearing people say the voice of a God and not of a man and not correcting him that God struck him with worms and he died. So much for Herod Day. The big picture ultimately is that God is writing your biography. And this season, maybe even a sustained season of success, is only one chapter in the story. We cannot forget to thank Him for what He has helped us overcome. And we cannot forget to thank Him for how He continues to help us as we seek to be who He would have us to be. The real key to all this is to remember to define success the way God would and not the way the world does. There might be times in your life in which you have some level of success in the way the world defines it. Maybe you get a big raise or a promotion. Maybe you start a business and it takes off. Maybe you win an election. Maybe you hold some place of prominence. Maybe you amass a large following on social media. Maybe, just to use a simple term, you're just popular. Those are ways that the world sees success. And if you seek those things for their own end, if you seek those things for their own merit, you lose sight of God. But every single Sunday night, our pew packers remind us of what success really is. It's living faithfully for God and going to heaven. That's it. You may or may not have a lot of money. You may or may not have a business that takes off. You may or may not get a lot of likes and hearts on social media. But if you walk with Jesus and go to heaven, there will never have been a more successful person who walked the face of the earth than you. And the only way to know that success, is to submit to God, because He's the only one that can help you do it. Out of this world I shall never take. Things of silver and gold I make. All that I cherish and hoard away, after I leave on earth must stay. Though I have toiled for a painting rare to hang on my wall, I must leave it there. Though I call it mine and boast its worth, I must give it up when I quit the earth. All that I gather and all that I keep, I must leave behind when I fall asleep. And I often wonder just what I shall own in that other life when I pass alone. What shall he find and what shall he see in the soul that answers the call for me? Shall the great judge learn when my task is through that my soul has gathered some riches too? Or shall it at last be mine to find that all I had worked for I left behind? Joseph reminds us that from the prison house to the penthouse, God's with it all. And whether you go through a season of success or whether you spend your life in the pit, God's with you. We turn our lives over to Him and we seek to be faithful, even in times when the world would say, look at you. You get yours. You're the king. Joseph is a life that reminds us that while, yes, we have talents, abilities, and we develop them, God's the reason for all of them. And to Him be the glory. To Him be the credit. And let's point people to Him when He gives us those moments of joy, success in this life. Tonight, are you a faithful follower of Jesus? Maybe it's dealing with not success. There's some difficulty in your life and you want to make sure your life is right with Him, but maybe it is a time, you know what? I've been blessed in this life and I haven't been giving God the credit for it. I realize that I've been doing things for me instead of making sure that I use whatever God has given me to His glory. The most successful thing you can ever do is become a child of His. Live a life faithful to Him. And so if you've never been baptized, immersed in water for the forgiveness of your sins, to begin that walk of faith in Him, we invite you to do that tonight. Or as a Christian, if something in your life is amiss, any repentance, forgiveness, encouragement, I invite you to come, voice and sing, to encourage you.